put it on that first slide for me. Let me see a show of hands if any of you have ever fallen asleep in the car on a long car ride and arrived at your destination faster than you were expecting. Okay, keep your hands up if you were in the passenger seat when that happened and not the driver's seat.
Hey, Dad, you have to keep your hand up.
Cause you yeah. So, let's see here. No, I don't have it on yet. Today we're going to be taking a look at prophetic landmarks, past, present, and future. I'm going to leave some of that interpretation up to you to decide. Are we talking about past events, present events, or future events? Well, we're going to look at the Bible and some of these landmarks in prophecy that God has said will happen at some point. Are they past, present, or future? I think this will probably turn into at least a 2 or 3 part series. I'm also preaching next week, so I think probably we'll continue this next week, if not longer than that. I think we have to talk about prophecy right now. We cannot look at the world events and not discuss prophecy as a church, as Christians, as a group of believers, but also as we're out in the world around other people. There's going to be more and more people begging to find the truth of what is to come. Are we in the end times? How close are we? I liked this little internet meme I found. It said, parenting is mostly just informing kids how many more minutes they have of something or until something. It doesn't matter whether we're on a long road trip. We recently, a few years ago, took a long road trip in a rented RV all the way across the country on Route 66, and it took us most of 3 weeks to get there and back, to California and back. But it doesn't matter whether we're on a long road trip like that or we're going to Schnucks grocery store and back. It's 20 minutes away. Our kids constantly are asking from the back seat, how many more minutes till we're there? Or how many more minutes till we're home? The funny thing about that is most of them, except for maybe Carter, have really no concept of what a minute or an hour or anything is. You know, they don't have a good concept of time. But they want to know how many more minutes. And they want to look at the clock. And most of them can't even read the clock. But they want to know, like, how close are we to getting back home or to getting back to whatever it is I want to do next? And I think that's not really very far off from what we, as most Christians and even pastors and people that have been to Bible college and things like that, I think we're not far off from really my children asking about how many more minutes. We don't have a good concept of the time of a lot of these things that are described in the Bible. We have some landmarks, but the Bible also tells us that in God's mind, a day is like 1,000 years, and 1,000 years is like a day. So what we think might be close, or what we think might be minutes away, we could be way off. The Jews had that problem when Jesus was on earth the first time. They thought, hallelujah, this is the Messiah. He's going to establish the kingdom. He's going to save us from all these oppressors. But their timing wasn't quite right. They didn't quite understand what had to happen first. Recently at an EAA meeting, Experimental Aircraft Association, for those of you that haven't heard me talk about that group that we're a part of before, we go out to the Cottonwood Airport in Rockford pretty often, and we participate in a a club called the Experimental Aircraft Association. And recently, we had a guest speaker who was a historian. And he was speaking about a famous person in aviation history who happened to be from the Rockford, Illinois area. And his name was R.J. Hassel, but he was better known by the name Fish Hassel. Anybody ever, show of hands, anybody heard of Fish Hassel before, besides my family? He had a plane that was called the Greater Rockford, and that plane is still on display at the Midway Village Museum. You can go see it still today. But why is that plane famous? Well, he decided he was going to fly this plane and develop, his plan was to develop a route that would be more efficient to travel from Rockford, Illinois to Stockholm, Sweden. And he was going to go fly through the Arctic to get there is basically what his plan was. And he did accomplish this. He did arrive in Sweden, but he miscalculated on some things and landed short of where he intended, and his landing was kind of rough. Some would call it a crash, but he survived. So him and this co-pilot, Parker Kramer, who was better known as Shorty Kramer. So you got R.J. Fish Hassel and Parker Shorty Kramer. In August of 1928, flew to Stockholm, Sweden, or to the area, but they crashed this plane. And so they didn't really have all the supplies they needed to get across this terrain and get to where they could get some help. So they had to really rough it. They had to huddle together for warmth and all kinds of things. But you can read in their account of what happened that they saw these mountains in the distance. And they figured that they weren't that far away, so that they'd be able to just walk there. But the longer they walked, the mountains never seemed to get any closer. So they were worried that they might die, because they thought, well, we'll be able to get at least to the mountains and we'll be able to get some help there. They thought maybe it might, I believe the story was that they thought it might be 3 days away, 3 days walking. But by the 11th day, they finally reached the mountains, and they did eventually get rescued, and the plane stayed there at its crash site for many years till eventually somebody decided they ought to bring it back to Rockford, and it's now at the Midway Village Museum. The Greater Rockford is the name of the plane. Here it is, right here. And here it is at Midway Village Museum today. These are the guys. Fish Hassel and Shorty. You can see why they called him Shorty. That was in 1928. But the distance of the mountains that they were trying to get to never seemed to get any closer the longer they walked. Many of us have seen the movie Jurassic Park. There's a famous scene in there where there's a rearview mirror and a T-Rex is in the mirror, coming closer and closer, bearing down on the vehicle. And so here's an example. We'll come back to the Jurassic Park. But these are not Shorty and Fish, but let's just picture. You can imagine when you're looking at these mountains and you're looking at this here, we don't really have a good concept of how far away these things are from each other. But if you look at a more detailed image of this picture, all of these little dark bumps here are actually tall pine trees. So what seems close is obviously very, very far away. And then that puts in perspective these peaks, who knows how far away they are. It would be an impossible task to walk that far. But okay, so back to the Jurassic Park. So the T-Rex is bearing down on the vehicle, and you see in the mirror, in a theatrical masterpiece of movie history. They've got the objects in the mirror closer than they appear, just like is on most of your car mirrors. So I'd like to say when it comes to prophecy, though, I think that objects in the mirror appear closer than they were at the time. So we have the benefit of hindsight, is what I'm trying to say. When we look at prophecy, we feel like, how could these people not understand what was happening? How could the Jews have crucified Jesus? They didn't understand he was the Messiah. How could they not? How could they miss that? Well, we have the benefit of hindsight. And so objects in the mirror now, as we look backwards in time, they appear closer and we understand them better than they did at the time. So what's bringing all this on? Why do I want to talk about all this? Well, if you haven't paid attention to any news this week, Israel has been attacked by a group called Hamas. So we've got this little strip of land in the Middle East, and it sounds like we're on the verge of a major war there, over that land. Who cares about this land? Why does that little piece of land matter so much? Well, because both sides believe that God promised it to them. And so they're willing to fight to the death about claiming that land. And I think that probably, if not now, at some point in the future, a fight like this is going to wrap in, it's going to pull in all the nations of the world, and then the end will come, and then Jesus will return. So is this the time? Are we there yet? Are we, how many minutes away from the return of Christ are we? Are we minutes? Are we hours? Are we decades? I've asked Carter to do a project this week for school where we're making a timeline together. And I've asked him to use a yardstick as the basis for his timeline. So this is approximately a yardstick's length, right? And so we've together been putting some major world events onto a timeline where the yardstick is the scale. And so, Carter, tell me, what was it that 5 inches equals how many years?
1,000 years.
1,000 years is 5 inches on a yardstick, roughly. So way back at the start of the yardstick at zero, and we actually are only using 30 inches of the 36-inch yardstick, but just for simplicity, if you imagine a yardstick, and at the zero mark, you've got creation. That was roughly, according to most biblical theologians and the chronologies and the genealogies that are mentioned in the Bible, most people believe that the creation happened about 4,000 BC. So we're about 6,000, roughly 6,000 years over the course of 30 inches. So I put up here, and I know you probably can't read them all, and that's not the point, but we put on our timeline some of these events. So 4,000 BC is creation, if we're going to accept that as our landmark. Then about 2,000 BC is when Abraham was called. That's mentioned in Genesis 12. About 1446 BC is when the Exodus happened from Egypt, and so on. And so we've got all these world events that were important to the history of Israel. And now it's not wanting to click forward again. Could you click it forward for me one time? Okay. And down here, we're going to skip through some of these, but number 15 was 1492. We just had Columbus Day recently. Christopher Columbus' voyage was in 1492. So if we've got the start of the yardstick with creation over here, about where was Columbus on the yardstick, Carter? Do you remember? Sort of toward the middle. But then we've got all kinds of events happening here. 1945, the end of World War II and the formation of the United Nations. A lot of people believe that this is a fulfillment, or at least in part, of prophecy, because we have to have a central government that governs more of the world than just one little territory. A government that governs most of the world is prophesied about, or all of the world. So in 1945, that's when the United Nations was formed. That's an important date. 1948 was the establishment of the State of Israel again, and that's mentioned in Ezekiel 37, verses 21 through 22. 1967, the reunification of Jerusalem. That's mentioned in Zechariah 12, verse 6. You might jot some of these down. 1973, that was 50 years ago. This week, there was a war and a similar attack on Israel, like we just saw this past week, called the Yom Kippur War, 1973. 1979, there was an Iranian revolution. And then here's some things that most scholars think are still yet to come. They haven't happened yet, but are still prophesied about. But as we're looking at that yardstick of time, we've got some things happening throughout this side, but a whole bunch of things happening in the last 6 inches here. And it's kind of startling to look at the timeline that we're creating together. If you put down, you can do your own research and check it out, see if we're correct or not. But look at any major event that's happened involving Israel and put it on a timeline. And look at the frequency that world events are happening involving Israel in this last 6 inches of time. So we need to take notice. We need to take notice about what's going on. So I put up a whole bunch of verses up here about prophetic events, things that are supposed to happen according to the Bible, and somebody would say, well, I can't remember all those. So I put them all on one page for you here. So if you want to just write them down real quick, this is all of the verses that were referenced in those prophecies. No, there's no way you can remember all of those. And so sometimes we feel like we're incapable of having an intelligent conversation with people that are asking questions about prophecy. We just talked on Wednesday night about what's going on in Israel. And more than once, myself included, but others as well, said something to the effect of, well, I don't really know where this is at, but it doesn't it say something about, you know, and don't we do that when we don't really know about all of these things. We don't have them memorized. We're not experts. We're not college students on studying prophecy. Most of us haven't studied it at a college level, but even those of us that have, we don't use it every day, so we don't remember all these things. So I want to break it down onto a more basic level. And today, just focus on two places. And like I said, this is probably a 2 or 3 part series. So today, if you want to know about what's going on in Israel, you want to know about what the Bible says about future events, probably the best place to start is Matthew chapter 24. And so now I know we don't have a ton of time, but I'm going to hit some of the highlights of Matthew 24, and I invite you to read it some more later on your own. To truly grasp the significance of Matthew 24, we really need to understand its context. So the chapter opens with Jesus departing the temple. This is the second temple. There was one that had been before that was already destroyed. That's important to remember. But Jesus is departing the temple, and his disciples approach him to show him the buildings that are there. And in response, Jesus delivers a shocking prophecy. It truly was. We can't really overemphasize how shocking this would have been for Jesus to have said this to his disciples. He foretold the destruction of that temple that they were looking at. Many people, in fact, probably most people, believe that that prophecy that Jesus said in Matthew 24 was fulfilled in 70 AD. There is some room for debate because there are still some stones from that temple that are maybe on top of one another. But let's look at Matthew 24, just the first few verses here. Jesus left the temple and was walking away when his disciples came up to him to call his attention to its buildings. "Do you see all these things?" he asked. "I tell you the truth, that not one stone here will be left on another. Every one will be thrown down." So that happened, most people agree, in 70 AD when the Romans destroyed that second temple in Jerusalem. So that context sets the stage for Jesus' further teachings in this chapter. Matthew 24 is part of what is known as the Olivet Discourse. Where's Carter at? That's a churchy kind of word for a conversation on the Mount of Olives. Carter makes fun of me for saying that phrase. So it's a churchy kind of phrase. The Olivet Discourse means there was a lengthy discussion on the Mount of Olives. And Jesus revealed his knowledge of several future events. It covered the destruction of the temple, signs of the end times, what would be signs of his second coming. And it's important to note that he was primarily addressing the Jewish audience. But what he said had both present day at that time implications and future implications, things even for us. Matthew 24, verse 4 through 14. Let's read that together. Matthew 24, verses 4 through 14. I'll read it. Follow along if you would. Jesus answered, we should get verse 3 in there. "As Jesus was sitting on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately. 'Tell us,' they said, 'when will this happen, and what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age?' Verse 4, Jesus answered, 'Watch out that no one deceives you, for many will come in my name, claiming I am the Christ, and will deceive many. And you will hear of wars and rumors of wars, but see to it that you are not alarmed. Such things must happen, but the end is still to come. Nations will rise against nations and kingdoms against kingdoms. There will be famines and earthquakes in various places. All of these things are the beginning of birth pains.'" I think someone else mentioned in a sermon recently, like talking about birth pains. And once those birth pains start, there's no stopping it, right? The birth of the child is going to happen. And so Jesus is saying, this is not, when you see these things happening, that's not the birth of the child. That's not the final event. But that tells you, when you see these things happening, that's the beginning of it. And then you can be certain that the end event is coming. It's going to happen just like the birth of a child. Then you'll be handed over to be persecuted and put to death, and you'll be hated by all nations because of me. At the time, many will turn away from the faith and will betray and hate each other, and many false prophets will appear and deceive many people." Let's just pause there a second and ask ourselves, is this past, present, or future that he's talking about? Are there people that are being handed over to be put to death? Are there people that are being persecuted because of Jesus? Are there people that are betraying one another in our world? I'm not going to answer the question for you, but just think about it. Is this past, present, or future? I can think of some ideas of what I think. I was just listening to a podcast, I guess you'd call it, about North Korea. There was a journalist who has somehow made contacts with some people who live in North Korea, and they've set up this system of passing information through codes and through couriers, because if the North Korean government learned that these people were doing that, they would be killed immediately, because they don't want the rest of the world knowing what's going on in North Korea. But these people have developed a system to share what's actually going on there and how difficult it has been, specifically since the time of COVID, for the North Korean people to get any food at all. They used to be able to get some rice occasionally, or they'd be able to sneak across the border into China and get some supplies. But now, because of, under the guise of COVID, the government has tightened it down even more, so they can't sneak across the border. They've got really just hardly any way to get any food or anything that they need, and people are starving to death, and the government doesn't want the rest of the world to know that. And so they were just talking about how risky it is to even talk about this through code and through all these protections that they have, that if someone else in their family knew that they were doing that, they would absolutely report them to the government and have them executed, because that's their only chance of getting any food or anything. I kind of wonder, did we start to experience, not nearly on that same level, but kind of like that, at the beginnings of some of that, here in the U.S. when vaccines were being mandated? Didn't we have coworkers that were kind of tattling on one another about, this person didn't do the thing that was regulated by the government? So I don't know. I'm going to leave it up to you to decide. Are we past, present, or future when Jesus is saying these things in Matthew 24? And there's a whole lot more there that, for the sake of time, I'm going to just invite you to read this week. And we'll probably continue this discussion next week, and also look at some other places. We know there's going to be rumors of wars, earthquakes, famines. We know from other places in the Bible that the sun will be turned to darkness. Did you know there was an eclipse this week? We know that the moon will be turned to blood. Did you know that India just recently landed a spacecraft on the moon, and there is tremendous uptick now in other nations to try to get something to the moon? It's like another space race again. The moon will be turned to blood. What does that mean? Maybe there's fighting over the moon. So a lot of these things, am I willing to stick my neck out and say, yes, this is the beginning of the end, or this is the end, or this is how many minutes we have left? No, I'm not. But here I've got a chessboard that's been sitting up here this whole time. My dad made me that chessboard when I was, I don't know, about 10 years old or so. I think I maybe shared part of this story before. I had a birthday party with some friends, and we stayed up all night long playing the Nintendo Entertainment System, the original, the gray one. We stayed up all night the night before my birthday, because it was a Friday or a Saturday, I don't know, but my birthday fell on, let's just say, a Saturday. So I had the friends over on a Friday night. We stayed up all night. Then the next day, we were supposed to, as a family, celebrate my birthday. And my dad had made me this chessboard. And that was the big present that year. But I was so tired because I stayed up all night that I slept all day long. I fell asleep in the morning when the friends left after the overnight and slept all day long till it was dark again. And so then when I finally woke up and it was like bedtime, I was very upset. I was crying and saying, I slept through my birthday, and they still make fun of me about this, you know. But so the big surprise of getting this chessboard was kind of dampened because I was so tired and slept through the celebration, you know. But my dad made me this chessboard, and he was going to make the pieces, but he ran out of time, or he just didn't quite get them done in time. And so for the longest time, I had this chessboard with plastic pieces that I bought at a garage sale and didn't have the wooden pieces that you see now. And truthfully, I thought, I'm never going to get those pieces, because that was, like I said, when I was 10 years old, and now I'm 41. My dad said, I'm going to make you those pieces, but he took a couple decades to get it done. But just recently, I'm losing track of time, a couple years ago, now I think, he finally gave me these hand-carved chess pieces. So sometimes we are in danger of doing that with the Bible as well, that we sleep through the events that are important. We are not paying attention to the events that are leading us to a better understanding. We're sleeping through the things that God is putting before us as gifts, as we could be understanding things a lot more if we would just open our eyes, if we wouldn't be so involved in things that we're too sleepy to pay attention. And we're sometimes in danger of believing that God's never going to do that thing that he said. Because look at all these, our lifetime's been going on, and our grandparents said this same thing, and there's been wars and rumors of wars in Iraq and Iran and Israel for all of history. Remember that timeline. You can plot out all the wars that have happened in Israel on a yardstick, and there's a whole bunch more of them happening in the last 6 inches than in the other 30 inches. So we better not believe that God's not ever going to do what he said. Also, I don't know if there's any chess players in the room. I think there was somebody that was in the chess club, isn't there? Somebody's in the chess club. So the pieces have been set up like this the entire time I've been speaking. This doesn't mean anything to a lot of you, probably, right? Somebody that knows about chess, tell me what's about to happen. White is about to checkmate. It's white's turn, or gray in this case. This right here is the king. So if your king is captured, game is over. So it might look like this game has just started. The pieces have barely moved off of the starting line. What is set up here is this dark-colored player probably isn't very experienced in chess, because this player knows about a four-step checkmate. It's a trap. If you don't move these pieces early in the game, then what can happen is this bishop can move out, the queen can move out, and then when it's my turn now as this gray player, I can take this pawn, and that makes the king in danger of being captured. So the only thing he can do is kill my bishop, but then my queen is waiting to take him. So like I said, this doesn't mean anything to a lot of people. It doesn't mean anything to people that don't know anything about chess. But if you play chess at all, and you play against somebody that's better than you a few times, and they trap you in this four-step checkmate one or two times, you learn, I better not do that. So you need to move these pieces early on in the game or you're going to get yourself stuck. So, are we past, present, or future in some of these prophecies that Jesus is talking about in Matthew 24? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. But we need to be paying attention. God has said throughout all of Scripture that He will establish a kingdom. That's His desire, is to live with us in a perfect kingdom. It's been His desire since the beginning of time, the beginning of the yardstick. It's His desire at the end of the yardstick to be with us there. We see a tremendous amount of events happening in the last 6 inches of our yardstick. We need to be paying attention. Because although it doesn't really look like anything's happening here, the end is imminent.